There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast
on the left.
Right from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Honestly, I think the reason why I am so hungover is because it has been difficult to get food.
Yeah.
Are you on the food plan?
The food plan here? No, I wasn't. I'm not. I don't think I might be. Who knows? I'm not good at knowing things.
Yeah.
I'm not good at details about my own life.
Do people just hand you food?
Well, this show should be great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome to the last podcast on the left, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hello.
We can't hear your applause.
Yes.
Your applause doesn't matter. We can't hear it.
My name is Marcus Parks. I'm here with Henry Zabrowski.
Yes. Hi. Hello. Welcome to a very special edition of Last Podcast on the Left, sent directly into your headphones as you sit in the chair here in the Steer Lounge.
And Ed Larson.
Hello.
And with us today is a very special guest, our man, Dave Foley, host of the podcast, really, and of course, alum of Kids in the Hall. Everyone give Dave a hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're very good.
It's an honor, buddy. It's an honor.
Absolutely. Thank you. Honor for all three of us.
I'm assuming it's a pleasure for me to be here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So far, the evidence is piling up that it's a pleasure.
Things
to be
are
here.
Fine. Yeah. So far. Yeah. Yeah. And just so you guys know, a lot of people are super curious about Dave's illustrious comedy career and all the incredible things that he's done in acting and comedy. And we're not going to talk about a single one of those things. Yeah. We're not going to broach his history. No. We're not going to talk about the people he knows, the incredible show business connections he has.
I'm just here to talk about my porcelain figurine collection.
Really?
Yeah. They're my friends. They're my little friends.
You kind of look like a Hummel.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking more and more like porcelain as I get older.
So Dave, your podcast, of course, is all about aliens. That's why we're here at Contact in the Desert. And it's a guest-based podcast. You have a lot of guests on. So what is your favorite type of guest to have? Like military, civilian, academic?
It's weird. I mean, it's I guess something like some of the most moving ones have been like friends that like one was my friend Robin Rosan, who I didn't even know had an UFO experience, and I've known her for over 30 years, like almost 40 years, and she'd been living with this this incident in her life, and been like ashamed of it. It was like carrying that around, and we also had a friend of Tom's who had an abduction experience. And I think it's like those kind of human stories. But then, we've definitely had some really amazing guests on, some from the military. We had Maria Woods on, who saw a huge a UFO he described as being the size of a Walmart.
Cool.
Above a nuclear missile silo,
I love that stuff.
Like the Hudson. Yeah. It sounds a lot like the Hudson Valley incident.
Well, that's my friend Robin was in the Hudson Valley incident. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she was there and she said like her whole neighborhood, like 1,000 people were out in the street looking at this gigantic craft. And then like the next day, no one would talk about it. Like everybody just went, oh, no, everyone will think we're crazy.
It's the stigma was real for a very long time. Now I feel like, I don't know. Is it still a stigma?
Not in this room.
No, not here. No.
Why are you here? How did you get here, Dave? Like, how did you get to the UFO sickness? Like, why do you have this?
Yeah, has it always been like when you were like writing, like having a good attitude about menstruation? Were you like reading the alien books in between all those sketches?
I was always interested in it. And I think, I did write some sketches about, aliens. And some of them I kind of regret a little now. But, but it was always something I was interested in. And even like when I was doing news radio, like Joe Rogan and I would talk about UFOs all the time back in those days.
Oh, yeah.
Right, that you were with. But that was like before. For a long time, Rogan was a skeptic.
He was a hardcore believer back in the 90s.
Yeah.
And then, I was actually going to go on his podcast. And the night before, I texted him and said, Joe, you're going to be excited to know that I'm deep into UFOs right now. And he texted back, "That's all bullshit."
Yeah, that was like,
going, "What the fuck?"
He went through a whole phase where he was deeply anti-UFO, and then I was really surprised when he was like, kind of now the face of the new whistleblower movement.
Well, you can thank me for that.
That's awesome.
Because that night after he texted that, I said, "Really?" Well, and I texted him a bunch of movies that I thought he should watch. Mm-hmm. You know, one of them was Jeremy Corbell's Bob Lazar movie, but also some James Fox's stuff, and. Then at like 4 a.m, I get a text from Joe saying, "I'm back in."
So what was it that turned you back around to this like new renaissance of alien, you know, interest?
I think the thing that really got me was James Fox's movie, Out of the Blue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
James, which was, great. Which was like, I think it was the first documentary I saw that was well made. Had Peter Coyote narrating it. So it seemed, you know, sounded authoritative. and it was also just, it was the first time I was exposed to a lot of these incredible witnesses from military and government and fighter pilots from all over the world, all these amazing stories that I wasn't aware of.
It was the one that turned both me and my wife around. It was like, we just watched it on a whim one night. And by the end of it, we looked at each other and were like, "Oh, fuck."
Yeah. It was just sort of going, well, I like to think of myself as a smart person.
Yeah.
And if this is going on as a smart person, I should be paying attention. And how was this... You know, how was I discouraged from caring about this for so long?
Yeah, and I guess to that point, like what type of witness do you consider to be the most trustworthy?
I think probably the fighter pilots.
Yeah,
that's where I'm at too.
Yeah, just because
they have so much to lose.
Well, yes,
that's what they do. They look out of cockpit all day.
Yeah, and they're training. Because there's always that. To be generous, I'll call them those idiots who will say, "Well, you know, eyewitness testimony is the worst kind of testimony." And I was going, "Oh, well, all right, that makes if you're standing in a bank and a bunch of people come in with guns and hold the place up, yeah, you're not going to be a great witness because you're going to be panicked and you're not going to be you're going to be fearful and that's going to affect your But I say ask me to walk through a park, and then when I get to the other end, Dave, tell me all the plants you saw. So I'll be pretty vague. I'll say, "Oh, I saw some trees. I saw a palm tree. I saw there was grass and some shrubs." All right. But if you ask a botanist to walk through that park and at the other end of it, say, "Well, tell us what you saw," you'll get a lot more detail. But if you tell the botanist beforehand, "We want you to tell us everything you see in this park," at the other end of it, they'll have incredible detail and they'll have observed very closely everything. And that's what fighter pilots do, because they know after every mission they fly, they'll be debriefed. Even if nothing happens, they'll be debriefed on it and they'll have to give a full account of everything they did on that mission.
And you'll definitely have to tell that botanist to shut the ever-living fuck up.
Yeah, yeah.
About the plants. Yeah, why are you doing this? Yeah. Why did I ask you to do this in the first place? Yeah.
And that's what makes me just fascinated about like fighter pilots, passenger jet pilots, you know, the amount that have been coming out now. It's mind-boggling to think of how many there are that have said nothing. One that are afraid to come out. There has to be thousands.
And still one. I mean, look, there was like, because pilots who did say things in the past, they lost their chance to fly planes anymore.
Yeah, especially if you work for Delta, they don't want people like that.
Yeah, I want my experiencers in the Delta lounge. Like, I'll hang with them in the lounge, and I would it's nice to hang out at the Cabo Wabo with the. But it's having them fly the plane would scare me.
Yeah.
Be like, that's not what I want. I do.
You think this UFO wants to play chicken?
We just had a conversation with George Knapp and Jeremy Corbell, and one of the things that we talked about was the fact that a lot of these guys kind of get off on the fact that they have secrets. That there is that other side of it where there, and then I also, George Knapp kept bringing up the fact that some people do actually are patriots.
Yeah,
which I forget.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the word patriot to me is a bad word.
Yeah, it's been colored. By horrible people.
Because they also like Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Also, like, why would you pat yourself on the back for just coming out the vagina wherever you're at? You didn't choose it.
Yeah. Well, some argue. I don't believe it, but some say we choose our parents.
Yeah. I did.
I did. No, man. If that's really on me, then I owe me an apology.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to this subject, don't you feel like secrecy is counterproductive to learning anything?
Certainly the people that aren't keeping the secret, sure.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. I'm sympathetic to the notion that there are things that need to be kept secret. Yeah. You know, there are national security concerns. Because there are adversaries that do wish us harm, and of course they feel the same way about us. You know, yeah. But
can you imagine giving all of these secrets to other comedians? You know what I mean? Like, this is not like just the fact that comedians are embracing this subject, and they're the least respected, least trusted source of, as they should be, as they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
So it does sort of seem very appropriate
to keep the secrets from us, or no, to give them to
maybe
us,
to give them to us. Maybe the idea is to give. Let us, like, that's why we're getting all these great guests. Well, in the UFO world.
Yeah. Well, you know. Well, here's the thing. Comedians were for decades. We were really good, useful idiots for creating the stigma. You know, comedians played an outsized role in really harming people who had these experiences.
Yes.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. How many anal probe jokes have been made?
I wrote a whole sketch about it, man.
So, I know.
Yes. I've made many probing jokes in the last, probably 25.
Yesterday, you made 25 yesterday.
I have to say, in my defense, when I wrote that sketch, it wasn't really about aliens. It was about how I felt about being in the Kids in the Hall at the time. So I was like, I was really going to, it was year five. How many more of these fucking sketches can I write? And, we got to be so edgy.
So on your podcast, like, which guest to you has been the most surprising?
The most surprising.
Or even the most fascinating.
Well, now I got to try and remember names because I always forget everybody's names.
Oh, so do I.
Because even my family members.
I just do it by shape and colors.
Yeah.
I mean, we can definitely. Well,
most
surprising.
To,
well, no, I would say, I mean, Whitley Strieber was a challenging.
Challenging
interview.
Yeah. That's also another adjective we can use when talking about UFO gas. Is challenging.
Yeah. Challenging.
Yeah. Because I was like, huh? And it's like so much stuff was coming at us. Tom and I were both going, hold on. And what? Let's go back to this 11-year-old who shows up in your yard. Let's talk. What? And we're trying to figure it out. But that was a very, there was a lot to sort of try and grasp and keep straight in your head when you're talking to him. I guess I'll go back to Mario Woods was a really incredible, his story was pretty surprising. There was details I hadn't heard before.
I do feel like you've already opened your life to so many psychopaths by being in show business.
Yeah.
That, like, is this not just a further descent into bringing kind of unreasonable, undealable with humans into your life?
That ship had sailed when I agreed to work with the other kids in the hall. You know, I gave up any hope of living amongst reasonable people.
At least it gives you a good, that's a very good, barometer then. It's good armor.
Yeah, actually, I just realized, you know who was also very surprising was Richard Dolan. But it was really surprising because he was a huge Kids in the Hall fan.
Really?
Which I did not anticipate at all. He was like, he was like fanboying. And I was like, oh my God, and I was trying to think. I don't think I ever remember seeing Richard Dolan laugh.
I don't think I've ever seen him smile.
No, he's always so serious. Yeah. So that was a real surprise. That was a delightful surprise.
Yeah. Is there anyone in Hollywood or are there people, how prevalent is the belief in aliens in mainstream Hollywood?
I think it's probably about the same as with any other community. You know, I think it's, I definitely know people that have had experiences and won't talk about it because they're afraid of the stigma still.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to be considered, crazy UFO people. And then again, once I started talking about UFOs publicly, I was also startled by the number of people who came, came over to me with their stories and, told me what had happened, to them.
Well, before we get, you mentioned the Mario Wood story, and I know you want to talk about that one, but before we get to that,
I don't want to talk about anything.
That's a real comedian.
You came out with your own UFO experience.
Yeah.
Very real, credible UFO experience. I saw the drawing that was done of your sighting. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that. Tell us about that night.
Yeah, well, that was pretty... It's weird in ways that aren't just about the UFO part of it. I was with my... Well, you were just talking to Jeremy Corbell earlier. It was with my friend Jeremy, who I'd become friends with because I was talking about his movie with Joe on Joe's podcast. And Jeremy reached out to me on Twitter, and we became friends. And then, so after we were friends for a few years, I was out visiting Jeremy, and we were out walking his dog, out on a sort of a country road. And it was a beautiful night. There were all these, and I was standing there, like looking at all the commercial air traffic way off in the distance, and going and thinking, wow, this would be a great night to see something. Yeah. And 30 seconds later, Jeremy goes, Dave, turn around. And I turn around, and off right where I had been looking at the air traffic, there was this orangey gold object, about 10 times bigger than anything else over there. And it was pulsing with this orange light, and it had three white lights on the front of it as it was coming around. And it was like a sort of a rounded triangle shape, And
like this, kind of like a yield sign.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
And sort of like those hearts that are being sold made out of quartz over in the merch area.
Oh,
here.
I haven't seen. Oh, I should go get one.
You should go get one.
You should go get that. That'll really rebalance you.
Yeah. And I should get some of the muscariate over there.
What's muscariate?
Mushrooms.
They're legal
ones.
Yeah, I have some. We have some. We can get you some.
Yeah. So we saw this thing, and it circles this valley that we're in. Like I said, like goes from like a 2 o'clock position in the sky all the way around to about a 7 o'clock position, and neither of us we didn't say anything, we didn't react to it. We were both just completely silent and calm. Neither one of us got excited, except at one point, Jeremy goes, "I'm not even going to try to take a picture." Yeah. And and I know that Jeremy practices getting his phone out and getting the settings right, and
like a quick draw.
Yeah. And I think he's got like a Galaxy phone with the great lenses on it, just for that purpose. And me, I didn't even occur to me to even think about taking a picture.
Yeah, but that's what they say. That's why I get the complaint a lot over all the years of people saying, "Why is there no good footage?" After all of this time, with all of this technology, why? Yeah.
With every person in the world has a camera in their pocket.
Yeah. It's because, thankfully, the phenomena largely impresses you to a point where you don't necessarily want to take a picture immediately.
Yeah, well, I actually felt like when it was over, because, again, we said nothing till it finally went off behind the mountains, and then Jeremy goes, "Dude, that was a UFO." And I go, "Yeah, I think that was a UFO." And then we started talking, but I felt like... the thing we were looking at was in control of how we responded to it.
Yeah, that's what I hear that time and time again.
I felt the same thing when I saw Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah. Why am I not screaming? Yeah. Or why am I still here 3 hours later?
Stop playing Rosalita.
Yeah.
Well, I very much appreciated the way that you went on Twitter with it. Did you draw that yourself?
I did. The picture of it? Well, that's the other weird thing is I can't draw. But then the next day I thought because I felt like this memory was getting pulled out of my head already.
Yeah.
And so I sat down with my iPad and opened up an app I'd never used before. Immediately found exactly the colors I needed. Found exactly the tools I needed to draw it. And in 15 minutes, I went, "Oh, okay, I'm done." And again, I can't draw at all. I have no ability. And
it's a very evocative picture.
Yeah, and I sent it to Jeremy right away and said, "Is this what we saw?" And he said, "Yeah, that's exactly what it looked like."
Damn,
it's incredible. But I do also appreciate your responses. Your responses to other people, it was the classiest way to say, "I know what I saw," that I've ever read.
Yeah, well, I mean, to me, it was just, I figured... you know, I guess part of like my whole career, I've never really cared much about, you know, what you shouldn't talk about.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, and the kind of comedy that I've always done. So, so I thought, well, I don't really care what people think of me, yeah. you know? So if I can go out and talk about it and maybe lessen the burden that somebody out there has, who's like walking around with this, an experience that they don't talk about.
It probably also makes you a much better sympathetic interviewer to people who've seen some shit. So you can't, you don't immediately go like, and why didn't you take a picture?
Yeah.
Like as soon as he said.
I know. And it's like, and people kept saying, you know, if this is real, how come why aren't you out there investigating this and trying to prove it? I said, I'm not interested in proving it. Yeah. I have zero interest in proving that I saw this. It's, you know, I'm just telling you an experience I had, and you don't have to believe it. I really don't care.
Unfortunately, again, Dave, you're new to UFO culture, so you're being too reasonable. I need you to sort of up the anger. I need more reactionary energy from you.
Yes, I know, because it's, what I love, and I was talking to George and Jeremy, I love the people that their whole attitude is, I'm bored. Tell me something new. I don't care if you go to prison for it.
I want things to stay the same. I want things to stay the same. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of the new.
Yeah.
Live from your grave.
Well, I guess speaking of going to prison, like, how do you feel, like, as sort of a person who's, you know, new to this world, like, how do you feel the whistleblower movement is going right now?
How's it going?
Like, how do you see this whistleblower movement?
Well, I think it's been very effectively crushed. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's, but not entirely crushed. I mean, you know, I think...
effectively grushed.
Grushed, yes. I think we still have this... David Grush is still, I think, a heroic for what he's, you know, done. And, you know, I think people like... Grush and Lou Elizondo, these people who are willing to really sacrifice their own security, their own, people, they're losing their like retirement incomes, you know,
they're tearing Grush apart now. Tearing him apart. They came out, they released his like bipolar disorder diagnosis. They released like all this stuff to basically say they're slamming him because he's skipping out on meetings with Arrow. He's supposed to be going to meet with them, and they're like, well, he didn't show up to his appointment.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And, of course, no one's going to meet with Arrow because they're full of shit.
Yeah, I guess it's like, it doesn't matter.
Everyone knows Arrow was a complete sham.
Yeah.
And so most of the, most of the people that are sort of queued up to be whistleblowers, none of them want to talk to Arrow because no one trusts them. You've got, you know, if you got Sean Kirkpatrick going around, you know, on his campaign of character assassination, not just of Grush. He's like, you know, he's basically calling anyone in Congress who's taking this seriously deluded and, you know, they're part of a religious cult.
Yeah.
You know, and he's, you know, so you've got, you know, and that's, you know, that's going all the way up to people like Chuck Schumer, Mike Rounds, you know, there's a lot of, not a lot to encourage people to go to Arrow.
Sure. I mean, what Arrow, the way that they look at it, it reminds me of when Fife Symington, the mayor of Phoenix, who was in power after
still
the Phoenix.
Still owes him a beatdown,
yeah.
dude.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't know, like, Fife, like the Phoenix Lights is, you know, possibly one of the largest and most widely seen UFO events in recent times. Yeah. Fife Symington, the mayor, came out and said, guys, listen. We solved it. We've got the perpetrators. And he brought out a guy in an alien costume.
Well, it's also the guy
handcuffs on him, and it was insulting.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's also the dude who let Joe Arpaio go wild for however long. So, you know.
And then, but then years later, he came forward and said, I saw it. Yeah, I said, no, I think it was a non-human craft, and he admitted, he said, and I saw it. He said, I saw the craft. And he said, I'm a pilot. That was not anything that we have.
And your name's Fife, dude. What are you, some kind of, like, grasshopper apprentice to a magician?
Yeah.
Like, that is the weirdest name I've ever heard for a governor.
Yeah, Fife Symington.
Fife Symington?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, when we're talking about, like,
well, his brother Piccolo Symington.
Oh, hello. Welcome to Arizona. Yeah.
Don't mind the rats.
They are my family.
Well, I guess recently, like, you know, we've had certain, like, you have, or I guess more like alien stories in the news. The mummy, the Peruvian mummy.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I keep thinking, like, my aperture of credulity. Mm-hmm. I keep thinking I can keep it tight. I can keep it, you know, focused. And then the mummies come along, and I go to myself, okay, that I can just, that's just bullshit, right? I don't have to pay attention to that. And then it turns out you do have to pay attention to it.
Welcome to ufology.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people studying these things and saying, oh, these are not manufactured.
They have items. Bones in them. They have bones in them. They are definitely some form of construct. They don't know exactly, but they do believe that they might be some form of ceremonial baby mummy.
Yeah,
which is cute as hell.
Yeah, but it's,
and I hope Alec Baldwin, if he doesn't, yeah. I mean, hopefully his trial goes well, so he can play baby mummy, because I think that would he be very good at. Yeah. But there's a whole thing. Did you see the way they brought it in to the Peruvian government when they were doing the big hearing, when the guy
he
literally brought him in two suitcases, like he was like an old timey vacuum salesman.
You got Jaime Musson is, and again in Mexico he's a celebrity.
She's
his show is huge. But he is a bit of a huckster, you know? I mean, there's a bit of a P.T. Barnum quality to him.
Can I ask your opinion on the inclusion of the huckster in this world? It's like, I kind of believe that...
This is an ongoing argument between me and Henry.
Yes. Uh-huh. Well, I believe that the huckster is crucial to the paranormal world, because unfortunately the huckster is the guy that packages it for public consumption and then puts it out. And then the problem is that then the huckster is the one who also makes the money on top of it, which is the sad part of the industry, the fact that there's an industry built around it. But I do think that some of the razzle dazzle is like important for the thing.
Well, and my argument against that is that the huckster is so easily disproven that it disproves and discredits the entire movement.
Yes, it blurs all of the distinctions and, you know, what you can consider to be credible.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
So I'm right.
Yeah.
You guys can agree. I might have a huckster. I'd say that it's like, you know, people have ENFP or whatever that phenotype is. I think I'm that.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I don't know, buddy. It's just like, have you went and gotten your balls measured? There's the incredible. They tell you your personality by your balls. It is over by the quartz dildos.
Oh. Yeah.
By the vibrating pads.
Oh, my God. So that's what that guy was doing.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Don't get the quartz.
I thought it was someone was just being pleasant. Why, thank you. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, a guy came up to me, grabbed my balls, and he said, you're an extrovert.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the guy grabbing your balls is probably an extrovert, too. You
know? I mean, the huckster for me, like, it lives very much in, like, the cryptozoology world. Like, my favorite huckster was the Bigfoot guy who showed up with a suitcase full of guts.
Oh.
Well, it wouldn't be like a suitcase. It was a cooler full of guts.
You
said was Bigfoot guts.
Yeah.
And I think
don't
it turned
bring
out,
the head, just the guts. Yeah, that's just, how we'll
don't
know.
Don't bring the feet.
Well, I don't know. Like, when do you think that cryptozoology, like, how far outside of the UFO world do you go? Do you go into the cryptozoology world at all?
I don't want to.
Come on in, the water's fine.
Yeah, but then again, you sort of go, you know, the trouble is you find out that there's overlap. There's overlap. Yeah. And I mean, it's like James Lukacsky, who ran the OSAP program. You know, he's basically said that you can't really do a study of UFOs without also looking at the paranormal.
Yeah.
Because he said that wherever the UFOs show up, paranormal events happen.
Yeah. The flaps.
Yeah. So things happen. So you know, there'll be UFOs and then there's going to be poltergeist.
Yep.
You know, or there's going to be, cryptids are going to show up, or, you know, there's going to be portals. So all these weird things are going to show up around where UFOs are showing up. And, you know, like Skinwalker Ranch is the, a great kind of focal point for all of it. But he said, you know, if you want to understand the phenomena, you have to look at all of it. You have to look at ghosts. You have to look at hauntings. You have to look at Bigfoot. You have to, you know.
Each day you become a worse and worse person. Like each day more and more difficult to reach, more difficult to build a bridge to.
But who's to say a poltergeist isn't an alien life form?
Yeah, no, well, I mean, that's what they were experiencing at Skinwalker all the time. Yeah. You know, classic poltergeist activity. And they're saying this is all part of the same phenomenon. That you know, there's a trickster quality to the to the UFOs.
Yeah, have you ever heard of the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot flap of 1973?
No. It sounds like a great album.
Yeah. It's one of those cases where you know people were for months seeing UFO after UFO, and people having like these very intense, like aggressive encounters with Bigfoots.
Yeah.
You know, throughout. Also, are you Bigfoots or Big Feet?
I would go Big Feet. Yeah, Big Feet. Yeah.
Wow.
You'd be incorrect.
Which, But then again, I cheer for a team called the Leafs. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess in that same vein, like some of our favorite stories throughout the years have been stories like, you know, the Battle of Dulce. Are you familiar with this story?
Yes. Yeah. The gentleman said he was basically on the construction crew of an underground bunker, alien hiding place. Yeah.
Phil and Schneider.
And he had a shootout with
And I'll show you my laser scars. Have you ever seen the thing where he lifts his shirt, you see the scars on it, which is just looks like my father had an old-timey surgery where they had, for some reason, his esophagus was loose or something when he was a baby. So they, carved him in half, and so he always had this scar across his belly.
Yeah.
And so, Phil Schneider always shows the hand. He's like, shoot what they did to my hand.
Yeah.
It's very sad.
There's no other way to lose a finger. No, I mean that there. That's one of the stories where I go, I don't buy it. You know, I'm not going to. You know,
but do you think there's because with stories like that, you know, because I do look at the hucksters and the people who are far more credible, and you know we're kind of believers, or at least I'm sort of a believer that like paranormal activity and sometimes UAP activity can be to the average person, let's say, extraordinarily dull. And it doesn't have a lot of zazz to it.
That's where the huckster comes in.
But that's the thing. Do you think that in those incredibly crazy stories, you know, do you think there's a kernel of truth that kind of grows into something that eventually grows into reptilians versus greys and a character named Cthulhu that blows off Phil Schneider's finger?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing is it's you know, as I said, I keep wanting there to be something I can just dismiss, to narrow it down, and then you keep going, oh, but then something comes along, you know, so to a certain extent, for a while, I just didn't really want to think about the abduction phenomenon, you know?
Yeah.
But then at a certain point, I realized, wait a minute, if I'm taking the notion that there are spacecraft circling our planet, interacting with people, they're showing up everywhere, it's more crazy to not think that abductions are real.
You don't even know what slippery slope you're on right now.
Yeah.
I narrated a documentary about the hybrid baby program.
Yeah.
And then when I met all these people, because I did the same thing, I was like, do I really want, if I do this voice on this, that means I believe in this.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, send me stuff. And so they sent me all the raw interviews.
Yeah.
And it's extremely compelling. They are traumatized. They have dealt with something. These are people literally saying, I had a baby inside of me. I watched a gray air lifted out of my belly. I went home. I had no baby inside of me anymore. And they're crying and stuff.
Yeah.
And first of all, I'm just, you know, I don't have emotions. So it's hard for me to accept. So I'm sitting there, but there's something happening.
Well, yeah. I mean, I remember reading David Jacobs' book, The Threat, back in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I thought, nah, this is too much. This is, reading more about it and, reading John Mack, who's,
he was legit too. And he destroyed his whole life. writing
yeah,
about
yeah, him. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, give us a little bit of a background on John Mack.
Well, John Mack, well, he was the head of Harvard's psychiatry department and had won a Pulitzer Prize for his sort of a psychological biography of Lawrence of Arabia. And he was pretty much as highly respected as you can be in the field of, you know, of psychology and psychiatry. And he got, I guess he got exposed to, blanking on his name. The guy who wrote, Missing Time.
Bud
Hopkins. Thank you. Yeah. So he met Bud Hopkins, and Bud Hopkins started telling him about the people he was working with. And so John Mack said, well, this sounds interesting. And so he started interviewing people. And
everything just blows up and everyone's saying, stop, yeah. John, yeah. stop. And he doesn't.
Oh, yeah. And people who, for no other reason than that he was taking abduction seriously, he was slandered by his colleagues and peers, and he was investigated by his university, and they were going to try to take away his tenure. And, and they were criticizing him publicly all the time and talking about him like he had gone crazy. But if you looked at him and talked to him, you could see he hasn't gone crazy.
No.
Yeah. And he doesn't think any of the people he's talking to are crazy. He thinks they have a real experience and he wanted to figure it out. And, then he also wound up going to Zimbabwe to investigate the aerial school.
That's where I know
sightings.
His name from, the aerial school sightings.
That's the most interesting case I think I've heard.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, and the documentary about it is fantastic, the aerial phenomenon.
No, and I feel like that is up there with my most compelling story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's the documentary you mentioned earlier. I mean, that just cinches it at the very end. It comes and it just kind of punches you in the face with the aerial school phenomenon.
Yeah. And then and again, it's that thing. You realize that these kids have been living with the ramifications of having this experience.
Yes.
And a lot of them of having parents that wouldn't listen to them, wouldn't believe them. And the trauma of just not being listened to when you've had an experience that is life-changing.
Yeah.
You know.
At least when you get attacked by a shark, people believe you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We got evidence.
Yeah, yeah.
I also, what I've really been doing is helping my buddy. He's got two young boys, and I'm really trying to help them get acclimated to the world by dressing as a gray and hovering in front of their bedroom window before they go to sleep.
Yeah.
Only just to kind of get them used to it. I just do like a slow like wave. I go like this. I say, I beckon them to come. I say the earth's in danger. A lot,
yeah.
But I just say, Earth's in danger, Earth's in danger, just to kind of get them used to it.
Yeah.
And they so far have really been, they're doing well in school. Yeah.
It's a good thing. You know, not a lot of people take the time to do public service.
And they didn't ask for it.
No. That's what makes it more generous.
Yeah, they explicitly said they didn't want it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was like, can you stop me? You have to sleep.
Yeah.
We're talking about this guy who put everything on the line, pretty much ruined his life to talk about this stuff. How close are you to ruining your life?
Oh, not at all. Because there was no reason to take me seriously to begin with. Yeah. there was a chance. I mean, I don't know. There may be jobs I won't get because, you know, someone goes, oh, he's into crazy. Crazy UFO shit.
Dude, Dean Cain still makes like three movies a year. Yeah. There's a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
They're weird.
Well, there's a mystery.
yeah. So what is the violent opposition to it? Like, what is behind the violent opposition to any sort, someone giving any sort of credence to UFOs?
Well, it's deliberately created, and there's like a paper trail on this that there was the CIA set up something called the Robertson Panel back in like 1952 because they were having a problem of like UFOs were buzzing the White House and the Capitol building over like two weekends, and everyone was seeing it, and everybody was reporting it, and everybody was all excited about it, and so the CIA got this panel together to try and figure out, well, what do we do about this? And their conclusion was, well, we can't do anything about the UFOs themselves. So let's get people to stop thinking about it.
Because then it's like it goes away.
Yeah, and that was their plan. And basically they used all the tools of public relations and propaganda, you know, that had been outlined, you know, like in, you can, you know, some of it you can read in like Noam Chomsky's Manufacturing Consent. Mm-hmm. I forget the name of the guy who actually created that term back in the 20s. Who, you know, inspired the Nazis mm-hmm. as well. It's a program of deliberate ridicule, debunking, and explaining, you know, mm-hmm. and creating the stereotypes that everyone latched onto and believe. You know, the idea of that all UFO experiencers are toothless hicks in trailer parks.
Right.
You know, and they're all crazy and, you know, and so that image of the UFO experiencer became so powerful that you know, people who were perhaps lawyers, doctors, police officers, air you know, commercial pilots would say, "Well, I don't want people to think I'm that," and yeah. So they would be silenced. So you had basically everyone too fearful to tell their truth, and you know, and it's so effective that you don't really, after a certain point, once you create the environment of what sensible people will and won't think about, you don't have to censor anything. You don't have to have a big, massive conspiracy because it enforces itself. Like a lot of people, I think, you know, there's a lot of people are convinced that most of the mainstream press are on the payroll of the CIA.
Sure.
And that's why they won't talk about it. And that's probably true in some cases. I mean, we knew that was true back, you know, back in the 70s. There, you know, hundreds of reporters turned out to be on CIA payroll.
Yeah.
You know.
I am as well.
Oh, good. Yeah. So I'm saying it's probably true in some cases. But I'd say for the most part, the editorial staff, the writers of at the New York Times, they just don't believe it.
Yeah.
And they don't want to think about it. And they won't look at the evidence. You know, so all of their journalistic skills go out the window if the Pentagon tells them something about UFOs, they don't question any of it. They don't do any follow up. They just print exactly what they're told by the government. And, you know, even like I remember watching a press conference, a Pentagon press conference, and they're talking about, you know, UFOs the old thing, they say, you know, well, 95% of this we've been able to explain, which is always garbage because, yeah, you've explained the stuff that we all knew was garbage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, but the only part that's interesting is that 5 you can't.
Yeah.
And on that, they'll just say something like, some things do display unusual flight characteristics. And not one journalist in the room said, what would those be?
Yeah. What does that mean?
They all just went, oh, that's it, just unusual flight characteristics. Oh, well, there, no, we don't need to worry about this. And, you know, the fact that those unusual flight characteristics are right angle turns at 5,000 miles an hour.
Yeah.
You know.
It would squish anybody inside into like a liquid. I do think that there's a reticent fear. I think there's a fear.
Yeah.
I think there's a little bit still of the just the straight up, that scares the shit out of me. Yeah. I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah. And also just that fear of I don't want to lose my position in the culture, you know. Yes. I'm the sensible one. I'm the smart one.
No one is.
Yeah.
And I think what's beautiful about the phenomena is that it does make a believer out of you, whether you like it or not. Like I think about J.J. Allen, J. Allen Hynek.
Yeah.
When he went into he was the debunk officer and then he came out of it. You hear time and time again, these guys that walk in as trying to be some form of objective observer. They see all of this stuff. It turns them crazy. Something happens. They break. Yeah. They fall apart because the phenomena is going to get you whether you like it or not.
It's too much evidence.
Yeah. Well, David Grush was thought he was going to debunk the whole thing in a matter of months.
Yeah.
And he spent 4 years researching it and interviewing people. And that's the thing. That's the other thing. People call that hearsay. But no, a 4-year investigation by a trained intelligence officer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who has clearances to, you know, the highest clearances you can possibly have in government. That a 4-year invest, that is not hearsay. That is the result of a lengthy and serious investigation. That's like saying, the prosecution in a murder trial Well, we can't convict because it's just hearsay because the prosecutor didn't even commit the murder.
Yeah. And well, there is within that, like, there's a bit of a conundrum. Not everyone can be telling the truth.
No,
like when it comes to UFOs, like it can't be that every single story. Where is the line of credulity?
Well, that's the thing. I think in general, the vast majority of human beings are full of shit.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
We all are. You know, people.
Me?
There are lots of crazy, yes, and there are a lot of crazy people in the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people living with delusions. So, you know, the UFO community is no different from the rest of humanity, you know.
But the connection to the intelligence services is also interesting because they also purposefully work with unreliable narrators. They purposefully work with people.
They'll promote them, yeah.
Yeah, and they move them through the system. These assets are, the whole point is that they're burnable, is that they serve a purpose and then we can scrape them off and no one's going to say anything. We're like, oh, he's just a loser.
Yeah, well, that's part of the program, part of what the Robinson panel recommended was to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you hear from a lot of intelligence people that, you know, military people will say, yeah, we didn't really have to do that much. The UFO community would do it for us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the UFO community has not really been the best at messaging.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it has to do with the lack of belts and the use of suspenders. And I think that there's a lot of lead and there's a lot of stuff and a lot of the pendants that these guys are getting from some of these vendors.
Yeah.
I think, unfortunately, you have to sift through all the bullshit to find anything that's credible.
And that's, you know, and again, that's just, you know, true of every walk of life, you know, that if you put away all your critical faculties, but then again, sometimes those critical faculties tell you, oh, I have to believe some crazy shit that I don't want to believe.
Yeah.
You know, for me as a lifelong atheist, I don't like the idea that I can no longer just blanket call religious people nuts.
Right.
You know, because now I'm going, there's overlap there too.
Yeah,
you know, that maybe a lot of like the you know, because I always thought of, you know, religious miracles that almost every religion has, that I always thought those were just bullshit stories told to con, you know, the marks, you know.
Yeah.
And but now I'm going, I guess miracles can happen. And if you're living in a time and or your frame of reference is religious, then you're going to interpret these weird things as miracles and give them religious value. But I mean, as someone who believes what people say about their abduction experiences, I mean, if people can't be levitated out of their beds and floated through solid walls, that pretty much qualifies as a miracle.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, it's the idea that any technology that it is sufficiently advanced enough is indistinguishable from magic.
Yeah.
Arthur C. Clarke.
Yeah. Yeah. We got to go, well, you know what? The Greek gods might have all kind of had a seed of truth to
Makes
it. You
as
know?
Much sense to me as the Bible.
My theory about a lot of the Greek gods is that I think that they... famous people of the time became archetypes, and as time went and the natures and the actual personalities that those things were represented on, that time passed, and that eventually like they just became figures of something. Like Dionysus was a guy or a person that was like very in the old days. He was a guy that like he always was the party guy, he always did the thing, and then it turned into a blown out version later on.
Yeah, that's quite possible.
Or it's total horseshit.
Yeah, or there were aliens.
Yeah,
that did things that looked like magic, and they seemed to be able to manipulate reality.
It's interesting you brought that out because I'm also a lifelong atheist, and so it's like what is it about aliens that I believe in that like I can't put that towards religion?
Yeah,
because an alien hasn't like got me super guilty about masturbating.
Yeah. No,
they want you to.
Yeah,
they want. They're excited for it because they don't want to. They don't want to pin you to the table and fish that thing up your urethra. They want you to just give it to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it might just be an alien has never asked you for money.
That's what it is.
That's the thing. Yeah. There's no guy that was like that. Where's? I mean, we David Miscavige.
Okay. Yeah.
Miscavige. That's where where Scientologists do ask you for money.
Yeah.
That crew.
The Catholics own a lot of nice property too.
Oh yeah. They can liquidate. Have you seen that? The pack of people in the Enterprise uniforms?
I saw them. I didn't know what they were.
So I have no idea. They look like Sea Org, but I don't know if they are.
I thought they were, but they are their own LARPing community, I believe, is the term, where they believe, work and live and act as if they are a Starfleet on their own.
Wow. Ah.
And I actually wonder if they have dues.
Yeah,
if they have to pay in.
I'm probably not the person to ask.
Actually, I'm the person to ask because I did speak with these people quite extensively at WonderCon last year.
Oh, there you go.
There's dues.
Those outfits don't come from nowhere. Yeah.
They are expensive. They have all the medals and they have all the sashes.
And unfortunately, depending on where you live in California, that you are assigned a spaceship. Like, you can't just say oh, my favorite's Deep Space Nine. I can't say, oh, I want to be on Deep Space Nine because of where I live. I have to be an Enterprise. I have to be Scott Bakula has to be my captain. It fucking sucks. Mad about it.
Do you know Scott Bakula?
I don't know Scott Bakula. I don't.
I have nothing against
the rest of this.
I don't know.
That's all I was going to talk about. I've been waiting for my in to see if I could get to him.
Live from your grave.
Well, when it comes to close encounters, you've mentioned how you've come closer to believing in abduction scenarios and all that.
I believe the stories that have been told.
One of the things that we've discussed on the show is whether this is physical phenomenon, whether you physically go into a spaceship, or whether it's psychic phenomenon. Because I know you recently on the latest podcast of your episode, you talked a lot about DMT and how that might relate to the experience. Do you think there's anything to the idea that UFO experiences are purely psychic phenomenon?
I think that was a big divide between Bud Hopkins and John Mack. John Mack was of the opinion that it's a real experience, but not necessarily a physical experience.
Sure.
And Bud Hopkins was pretty convinced, no, this is something that's really physically happening. And, and he, cited the fact that because they have evidence that people are actually missing. People are, they're gone for a period of time and then they're back. And, the people, in their homes are aware of it. They're, so I think as with almost everything in this to do with UFOs, it's probably a mix of both. I think probably some of the time these abductions I'll call it a psychic experience. Because, maybe they are gone to the extent that their consciousness is taken away and taken somewhere else.
Sure.
And that somewhere else could be an actual physical space as well, but your body doesn't go with you on it. Because the other part of the overlapping is the whole, the near-death experiences or now what some people are calling it recalled experiences of death. Because we're now reviving people who have been dead for over an hour.
Does that work?
Yeah.
We don't come back all weird?
Yes.
It's tricky because here's the weird thing is when someone's been dead for that long, reintroducing blood and oxygen to the brain it's toxic to the brain at that point and can kill the brain. So they're developing techniques for how to reintroduce the blood back into the brain, basically moving the blood throughout the whole body before it gets to the brain.
Whoa!
In order to avoid poisoning the brain with blood.
If I've been dead for 2 hours and I come back, do I still have to work for money? I feel like that should mean I'm out.
I feel like
that should mean you're dead.
Well, I think the doctor should be responsible for you for life.
Yeah,
that should be I was in a good place. Yeah. but he's saying the Parnia Labs at NYU. There's a Dr. Parnia. There's a great 45-minute documentary on YouTube about it. But he said, he said an hour. You're not. This isn't a near-death experience. These people are dead.
Yes.
These are good and solidly dead people, and they come back. And they come back with experiences that can't be explained because all of their sensory apparatus is dead.
Yeah.
But they're still having these experiences, and there's a certain uniformity to the experiences. And one of the things that's kind of a drag for religion is that it seems like everybody gets in. You don't have to follow any rules.
Right at the end, you can kill 9 families and yeah. you know, like play with their bodies, make puzzle pieces out of their child skin, and then at the moment you die, you can ask for forgiveness, and God's like, well, got it.
Oh, that's God, but I'm just saying, like, everyone who dies seems to have an experience where they go to this place, and everyone says, oh, I felt wonderful. I felt this overwhelming sense of love, and, you know.
And they describe a place.
A place, yes. Yeah, a lot of them, and a lot of them, it's a place, a very familiar place, like a field, you know, a beautiful field, or some people are in just sort of a light filled void, you know, but it's, yeah, they describe being somewhere.
Interesting.
And meeting people.
My father died for 6 minutes and he said nothing. He said, there's nothing. He's like, you got nothing to look forward to. It's all. Yeah.
We just want to make sure we leave you feeling hopeful.
Yeah.
Would you do like the Neuralink, but something like a Neuralink? Would you think you'd ever do that? Do you think that you'd go transhuman?
I'd probably do that. Yeah. Just out of boredom. You know?
I just wonder, because I really do, because like they're talking about, like, you know, the human body can probably naturally live to the year 200 and shit. It's like my parents hit 72 and they are out of money.
Yeah.
they had absolutely nothing.
Yeah. That is a problem. Yeah. I keep thinking, because I used to think, I'd like to live 200 years. And now that I'm 61, I'm going, oh, geez, I don't want to keep working that long.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. We should be put in like a field or something. There should be a field that we're put.
Yeah. No, and dead sounds really nice.
Dead sounds relaxing.
Yeah. If I thought death was imminent, the first thing I was thinking about is make sure I got a lot of naps in.
Yeah.
Because as far as I can tell, there's no napping in the afterlife. You never hear anyone saying, oh, it was great. And I had found a nice hammock and I lay down for a while.
No, it's like pressure of meeting every person you've ever known, talking to all your old relatives. Yeah. They're asking shit about like who's won the last 50 Super Bowls. Yeah. You're like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Aunt Judy, I thought you were gone.
So lastly, like, what is your case right now? What's the case you're obsessed with right now?
That I'm obsessed with? I don't know. Actually, right now, the thing that's bothering me, that no one's paying attention to it, is the fact that, like, Langley Air Force Base is constantly being buzzed by something they keep insisting are drones. But for some reason, Langley Air Force Base, where they store the top-of-the-line jets for the country. It's also the front line. If anything happens in Washington, they take off. They can't seem to shoot down even one of these drones. And this keeps going on, and it's been happening, you know, for months and months. And they just keep sort of dismissing it. And again, the press just goes, oh, drones. Who cares then? This is restricted airspace that these things are coming into.
Yeah.
And they can't knock them out of the sky. And at the same time, when Iran sent hundreds of cruise missiles and drones to attack Israel, they were able to shoot down 99% of them.
Yeah. And they just said, and then when we shot down that object over Alaska, it was the size of a sedan. We shot down that very quickly. I do think that they're full of shit.
Yeah. Well, and then they forgot to watch where it landed.
Yeah, that idea. And then what I love about the show is that I'll get like the emails from people like at the time. They were like, remember they said when they shot the object over Alaska, they're like, the storm's here. We can't find it. And they were all like, it was clear for a week.
Yeah, yeah.
It was utterly, it's just in the middle of nowhere. And they said they saw copters going back and forth and they were doing something, but it was like, didn't find this super top secret thing?
And originally they said it landed on the ice. So it's pretty easy to spot something that isn't ice on the ice.
So do you think with all this stuff, are we getting closer to contact, like full contact, or is it always been this way and people are just starting to talk about it?
I think it has always been this way. I mean, it seems like, that there's certainly a lot of good evidence that these incidents, these kind of experiences have been going on for thousands of years, as far back as we have recorded history. even in petroglyphs, you know, we're seeing these things. So it seems like it's been going on for a long time. And there certainly has been an awful lot of interaction, with humanity. And there's certainly with abductions, we're probably talking, you know, just in the United States, millions of people have probably had this experience. Mm-hmm. So it's just a question of, are we ever going to get to a general acknowledgement from society that this stuff is real and it's happening? And once we do, I still worry. I don't know how the world works once we're all admitting it.
Well, this is the thing that's now come up several times in a conversation this weekend that we've talked about, this idea of what disclosure means. What does it look like? Like, I'm still of the belief that a UFO could land on the lawn of the White House and people would not even believe it. That they would, now that at this point, information is so hard to confirm. Everybody doesn't believe in the mainstream media. Why in the living fuck would they believe that a UFO is real?
Or they would ignore it because, you know, what does a UFO have to do with the price of a gallon of milk?
So
I've had that conversation with somebody who said, well, maybe UFO is real, but how does it affect me?
Yeah.
And I said, well, that's, I understand that. But I said, hey, did you see that photograph of the black hole? And they go, oh, yeah. Well, why were you interested in that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, you think you're being rational, but you aren't. It isn't a rational thing. Well, it doesn't affect me, so I'm not going to think about it. No, you've been conditioned to respond that way.
It's like, I can't care about UFOs. I'm searching for Kate Middleton.
I've got to find her. This is a distraction. It's a smokescreen.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Where people say, oh, it's all a way for the Pentagon to get more money. No, they have more money than they know what to do with.
They don't need more excuses. They have, they're already asking for trillions of dollars.
Yeah, they're not, they don't, UFOs are not a good public relations ploy for the military.
No.
Because it's basically, you say, hey, you got to give us more money because we can't do a fucking thing.
Yeah, we don't know.
Now, do you find this to be scary or interesting?
Both. I think it's, I don't think it's wise to not be a little frightened by this.
Yeah.
You know, because there's, I don't know what happened. Again, I don't know how it changes the balance of things if we as a species all agree that this is real. I don't know if that changes how we're interacting with the non-human intelligences, plural, which seems to be the case.
Yeah.
I don't know how that changes how they deal with us if we suddenly become more of a problem for them. What happens? You know.
But so far, we can't really get past the moon too far. So I don't think they're really worried about us.
No.
I feel like it's also important that while we're invested in this material, it is good to keep a grounded foot outside. It's good to do things like see it. You know, be with people have family.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like people do stuff like that where they go anything else but UFOs. It's good.
Yeah. Well, that's what people asked Lou Elizondo what he thought, what people should do to prepare. And he just said, hug your loved ones.
Yeah.
You know?
Because when that rain of fire comes down, we're all going to be screaming, bubbling skeletons, even if we're miserable, even if we're here.
Yeah.
Hug your loved ones and dynamite. Your dynamite's good.
Yeah, throw it at the thing. Do you find that have you now had enough time yet in ufology for it to bring stranger or more interesting or crazier people into your life than like kids did? Or like, do you feel that you're still, you're not there yet?
No. I mean, well, you guys, in comedy, you know,
Yeah, we just dodge predators. Mostly you just dodge predators and then you just try to make it to the end.
Yeah, you know. I mean, I think it's actually, it's brought a lot of very interesting people into my life, and a lot of very serious people, and a lot of
I find it extremely sad. This is probably the only way I would have gotten to meet you. But I really do at the same time. It's a wonderful exploration.
It's much easier than you would might imagine.
I'll find you now.
Dave Foley, ladies and gentlemen.
This is so good.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
His podcast really is available wherever podcasts are available.
I hope so, yeah. I don't know why anyone would exclude it. Yeah.
You've been doing it for about a year now, right?
Just under a year, I think. Yeah.
So there's plenty of episodes out there. It's great. I've listened to a few episodes, so please go check it out. Anything else that you would like people to check out?
No.
not the New Kids in the Hall show on Amazon.
No. If they haven't seen it yet, they're not going to. And I don't want to. I don't want to say, I've been meaning to. You're never going to. You know.
And thank you so much to everybody who came out and saw all of our shows here at Contact in the Desert. Give yourself a hand, please.
Absolutely. And thank you so Contact much. In the Desert for inviting us. Yeah, this has been a lot of fun.
We hope to come back again next year. This has been such a great experience. So thank you all very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Enjoy the rest of your time at the conference.